Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Greeny. Mike Greenberg brings his unmatched depth of sports knowledge, fun, and entertainment to ESPN Radio weekdays from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern. Listen to Greeny as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcast. Also, fight fans, if you want the best UFC experience, you need ESPN Plus. With every pay-per-view event, live fight nights, exclusive originals, and an extensive archive, ESPN Plus delivers. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com. The Right Time with Bomani Jones is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we're going to talk about what's going on with the NCAA tournament. Also, we got your stories about people quitting their jobs in exciting fashions. But first... Oh, Gabe, I think me and Foxworth talked this up. Last time we had a pod on Foxworth Friday, I was like, it's only a matter of time before Kyle Shanahan, either he going to have to make himself the full genius with Jimmy Garoppolo, or he going to have to go get somebody else. And it appears that the plan is go get somebody else. 49ers traded 3 first-round picks in order to move up to the 3rd pick in the draft. Only time you're going to do something like that is if you're going to get a quarterback. Like, I've been amazed by how many people wound up in my Twitter mentions after this trade and were like, yeah, maybe they're going to go get an offensive lineman. No, the hell they are not. You just don't give up this much to get an offensive lineman. You give up this much to get a quarterback. Now, where it gets interesting to me is the idea that they went up to get a quarterback, but they keep telling everybody that they're going to keep Jimmy Garoppolo. What? Now, look, I get the argument that people are making. Like, the idea basically is, why would you get rid of Garoppolo? You don't know if this rookie is going to be able to play right away. The 49ers feel like they got a team that can contend for a Super Bowl right now. So keep Garoppolo around, see how it goes, and then maybe wind up making the switch at some point in the season. Like, I'm not saying that I do not understand where people are coming from when they bring up that possibility. What I am saying is, if you are not positive that this quarterback is going to be able to play right away, why in the world are you trading that much in order to get him? That's where I'm lost, right? So I think about when Washington made that trade to get Robert Griffin, where they gave up a very similar package in order to move up to the 2nd pick in the draft to get him. We knew that they were going to be starting Robert Griffin in week 1. I don't care about what their status for contention was or anything else. They knew that guy was going to be starting. And the reason that they were willing to give up so much in order to get him, and remember, we thought that that was a significant haul when they made that deal. But Griffin was viewed as a can't-miss prospect. Now, you could argue, obviously, that it didn't turn out that way in the end. They thought they had a guy who could do something similar to what Griffin did in 2012, in his first year in the league. They thought they had a guy like, right now, we got this set, and we're going to roll for the next 15 years. Like, that was the thought when you give up something like that. I myself think that that's a poor use of draft capital if what you're going to do is have a guy and be like, well, when he's ready to go, we'll plug him in. For all that? Like, that's just my read, is that if you are not positive that the guy that you're going to get is ready to play right now. And if he's ready to play, you play him. Like, that's the way I see it. It's not just like, oh, he's capable of playing in the NFL. Jimmy Garoppolo was not good. Like, I didn't realize this, Gabe. I saw this. Apparently, Jimmy Garoppolo has, like, the 3rd highest interception percentage over the last 2 or 3 years or something like that. It's just that they don't pass that much. So, like, the actual interception numbers don't look that high. But when you scale it based on the number of attempts, no, man, the dude throws the ball away a lot. That's the dude that threw an interception in the Super Bowl with his eyes closed, right? Like, if your guy that you're getting is not better than Jimmy Garoppolo, then what the hell are you trading all these picks for in order to get him? And I know that there's still a significant number of people who are Jimmy Garoppolo truthers, and they're like, nah, but the real problem is he just can't stay healthy. If he could stay healthy, he's a top 10 quarterback in the league. Nobody plays a game in the playoffs with a top 10 quarterback in the league where they only throw the ball 8 times. I don't care how big the lead is. I don't care what the circumstances are. That is not how you behave when you have a top 10 quarterback. And if you have a top 10 quarterback, it's going to take more than that guy gets hurt in order for you to make the decision that you're going to give up 3 first round picks in order to move up to get a higher pick in this draft. Oh, and a third. I forgot. There was also a third thrown in there, right? You don't do that if you actually think that your quarterback is good. Like, I keep seeing everybody being like, oh, okay, well, you know, if they put him on the trade market, then Belichick will go pick him up. You sure about that? Like, Belichick had a chance to look at what was cracking with that dude in the time he was gone. I don't know why you're positive that Belichick would see that and be like, oh, yeah, that's what's up. We want some of that. That's where we want to go. I just don't see that. So to me, if you make this trade and it works, this is fantastic for you. I just can't believe that the move you're making was actually worth all of this. That is the mind-blowing part to me, is that they think whoever the quarterback is that they're going to take is such a thing that they would give up, basically mortgage the future. Like, I think that's probably the best way to look at it. They made the call and decision that they would mortgage the future on whichever quarterback they are taking. Now, Gabe, have you been reading about who it looks like they might want to take?
Are you talking about reading one person's tweet?
Well, it's more than just one person's tweet at this point, right? So Kyle Shanahan's, his man's, Chris Sims. Like, keep in mind that them two dudes got their initials tattooed on each other's bodies, all right? They're close. They went to college together, all of that stuff. Sims made a very good point, though. He says that if you are making a move like this, you're doing this for a guy that you think is ready to play in the NFL right away. And he looks at who will be available at that point, and the guy that he sees who would be ready to play right away is Mac Jones. Do you move up to 3 to draft Mac Jones in 2021? You know, and so the thing for me with Mac Jones is, and I want to be careful in how I talk about him, because I've talked about this before. I don't really know how to evaluate guys who don't have any particular quality physically that wows you. You know, like, there's nothing. I talked about this with Tom Brady. Like, I could see why Tom Brady was a 6th round pick, because you're watching the film of him at Michigan and there's nothing that jumps off the screen. Like, you would think that if you're talking about a guy who played in college and now you think is going to be an NFL star, he would jump off the screen while playing at this lower level. It's not what Mac Jones is going to give you. Now, you can make the argument he made all the throws they asked him to make and ball placement and all these things that really, really matter. But the dude doesn't jump off the screen. Like, nothing about him feels like a guy that you're going to take with the number 3 pick in the draft. Like, when you look at SportsCenter and they show, like, the clips of Zach Wilson, and understand that that stuff is, like, they're showing you the best they can show of a guy. They're showing you the best television that these cats produce, right? Like, when they're showing you bad stuff, because Justin Fields is the only guy they show any bad clips of, right? When they showed the bad of Justin Fields, it's great television bad. You know, when they show the good of Justin Fields, it's great television good. There's no great television clips of Mac Jones. And he's throwing the dudes that are butt naked open. There's also that part. Like, we saw what happened with Tua last year, and it made you raise questions about, hey, man, how much of this is because these dudes you were throwing to are wide open? We've seen this happen with quarterbacks through time. USC, like, Matt Leinart becomes a great example of that, right? These dudes are wide open. How much credit are we giving you for the fact that you're throwing to dudes who were wide open? Now, could anybody throw the ball to dudes that were wide open at Alabama? I don't think you could just get a dude off the street necessarily that could do it. But I don't know necessarily if this is something that's going to translate to the NFL if he's not in a situation like he was in college, where he had basically every advantage one could expect around him. I don't know. But number 3? Like, everything I'd heard about the way the league was going and looking at a dude like that was, and with Shanahan also, you got to get you a dude who can move, right? Like, you want a guy who is athletic in this day and time. Jones doesn't appear to be that guy. And I say appear because, you know, we don't be doing right by white dudes, at least not in this level. Like, we do way right by white dudes in just about everywhere else, but we'll be quick to underestimate how athletic a white dude is, right? Like, maybe he got some moves that I don't quite understand. Gabe, maybe it's like Nikola Jokic, where it's like, he's athletic, but it's a different kind of athletic, right? Like, I don't know. I have no idea. But nothing about Mac Jones indicates the future of the NFL. Most of what we see from him indicates, like, the past, in a way.
Did you see someone had pulled out a clip of Shanahan from like after a game this season when he talked about how his perception of quarterbacks is changing in terms of what he sees as important in terms of the skill set. So I thought that was kind of interesting with all the comparisons that are happening with Mac Jones and, you know, other quarterbacks that are that Shanahan archetype, like Kirk Cousins. I mean, you hammer Shanahan. You hammer him for missing out on Deshaun and Mahomes. So maybe it could be that he's still so sick about that, that he's changed how he looks about things.
And to be clear here, I hammer him not simply because he passed on those guys, because I think the whole league passed on Mahomes, for example, right? Like there's a whole lot of people that weren't going to get it right about Mahomes. And Watson, I had questions about him also. I hammer him because he didn't take those guys because he wanted the privilege of paying Kirk Cousins like $30 million a year and $80 million guaranteed, right? Like that's the reason why I hammer him for it is not simply that he didn't take those guys, but it was because he wanted those other guys on top of that. But you're right. He seems to have had an adaptation in his mind of what he was looking for in a quarterback. So, but if that's the case, why do you take Mac Jones? And the other thing, Gabe, I don't know if you've seen this, but apparently the 49ers are going to skip Justin Fields' pro day in order to go to Mac Jones's pro day. You also hear people who talk about Trey Lance perhaps being the guy that they want rather than Justin Fields. Like we're hearing all these things. We don't know what is or isn't smokescreen. Who knows? They move up to three with the idea that they may still like move out of that pick because somebody else might jump up and decide that they want one of those guys. Because remember, the Falcons at four are going to probably still be looking at a quarterback. Like, I don't care what anybody says about this. For the same reason, if you think it makes sense for the 49ers to move up in the draft to get a quarterback and do all the things they did to get a quarterback, then the Falcons would have to take one. And we're talking about Matt Ryan going into year 14. I mean, okay, I guess, right? Julio Jones ain't got so many years left. Like, we're going into year 11 for Julio Jones. Coming into this season, there's only so long that you can keep betting on that. Falcons are going to get a quarterback. So if there's anybody that's laying lower that needs a quarterback, and this to me, though, is where like this gets a little bit interesting with the Patriots, because you could see a situation, they need a quarterback. Maybe they want to engage in some level of trade with the 49ers in order to get up there. Like there's all kinds of questions as to what it is that they're going to do. But if Kyle Shanahan did all that to move up to get a guy that he probably didn't have to move up that high in order to get, then I just don't know what kind of genius it is that we are working with. I just don't. And again, I also don't know, Gabe, why your people hold on so tight to Jimmy Garoppolo? Like what is it that makes it so difficult for them to recognize that my man just ain't that good?
I don't know, man. It's got to be just a section of the fan base that feels that way. Because there's a whole section of the fan base that is firmly both feet in reality.
Yeah. And your coach clearly is also, right? Like, he told you, we need a new quarterback. Period. It's not like Jimmy Garoppolo is old. That's the other thing that gets me about them making this move, where people are like, yeah, well, you could hold on to him for a little bit and then go to the young guy. Like, we're not talking about some dude that's 35 years old. If that guy's your quarterback, you don't go get somebody young, right? They are saying he's not the guy. But they're saying he might be better than the guy they're getting as of right now. And if he's better than the guy that they're getting as of right now, that guy's not worth three first round picks and a third, period. Like, to me, that logic is unassailable. But hey, man, they're going to make it run. I applaud them for being willing to take a big swing. Like, there's something to the fact that they even tried to do it. I just don't see any way logically that this involves Jimmy Garoppolo coming back to the 49ers. And that is great news for 49ers fans. Gabe, you can be honest about this. How much of this damn tournament have you watched?
I watched the last minute and a half of regulation last night, and I watched overtime for UCLA's win over Alabama.
Oh, that's right. The alma mater, right? Like, this whole early portion of the show is dedicated to Gabe Bassang. We got his 49ers, UCLA rolling deep. Like, we got a question on Highly Questionable today. They're like, what's more exciting? The fact that we got three number one seeds in there or UCLA? Because we try to make UCLA into a Cinderella type. Like UCLA hasn't won 11 national championships. Like nothing should be more embarrassing to UCLA than we looking at you like we did VCU 10 years ago. Hey, they got out of the first four. They were an 11 seed. That's what y'all are now, Gabe.
With Nick Cronin as the head coach.
Oh, God, I can't stand him. He irks me to no end. And he irks me. And it's really, I'm still holding on to that one thing. That time that his team got into that fight with Xavier and the whole bench got up and he just looked around after they went to fight like, oh, wow, these guys are going to fight. And it became very clear to me that he was petrified of his players. Like being terrified of your players is the ultimate demerit for me as a coach. Like it makes me ask all kinds of questions about what you think about these guys in the first place, why you got these guys in the first place, what kind of coach you are, all that stuff. Because you are scared of your players. And I watched that happen. And I'm just like, man, I ain't never going to be in on this guy ever again. But hey, man, they got there. That was a good game against Alabama. It was highly entertaining. I enjoyed it a great deal. But it's taken effort for me to watch this tournament. I think part of it is not having a crowd. That matters. Like the energy level simply isn't there. And the ratings, for what it's worth, at least on the first weekend of the tournament, have been pretty good. Like they were there, but it's because it's what we do. Like it's ritual. The NCAA tournament is on. Okay, we're going to go ahead. We're going to watch this. But what the NCAA tournament used to be, and I thought about this watching Houston play. I was talking to somebody else about this, people from Houston. The University of Houston is U of H in Houston. Nobody calls it Houston. You know, so like when they start watching these games, they call it Houston. I'm like, damn, I don't know what to call it. When I talk to other people. So when I'm talking about U of H, I'm talking about that because that's the only thing I really know to call it, okay? And they were talking about U of H, and of course, this means a lot of talk about Phi Slamma Jamma, right? Like, that is the, you boys ain't too young that y'all don't know about Phi Slamma Jamma, are you? Like, you're aware, Gabe, of Phi Slamma Jamma?
I'm familiar. I've seen the 30 for 30.
Okay, so the thing with Phi Slamma Jamma for me, though, like, as a person from Houston, I was going through the other night and just looking at some of those rosters. They're kind of like, what they accomplish is what University of Memphis basketball always wants to accomplish is not just to be good, but it's being good with all locals, right? Like those Phi Slamma Jamma teams, this won't mean nothing to y'all, but for my people from Houston, they will get this. They had like 4 or 5 dudes that went to Yates. Like it don't get no more Houston than going to Jack Yates, but that's what they were doing. And so if you ever get a chance, everybody remembers, for obvious reasons, the game between U of H and NC State, where North Carolina State won, you know, the Jim Valvano game, all of that stuff. But if you want to see some exciting college basketball, I know all y'all think that everybody who played back in the day was just a bunch of plumbers and they wasn't that athletic or whatever. Go watch, if you can find on YouTube, clips of the national semifinal game that year, which was U of H against Louisville. And it was as up and down and as athletic and as physically impressive a college basketball game as you will ever see. Like, especially considering the fact that it was in 1983. But the thing about the tournament then, and really what I would say is the thing about the tournament probably up until, by and large, like 10 years ago. Like, we get in that zone. It's probably a little earlier that the cutoff comes. But it was basically the U22 National Championship. Like, the NCAA tournament had the best players in the country under the age of 22. All of them were in that tournament. And the best teams were going to have a collection of the best 22 and under players in America. That's what it was to watch. What you don't have in the NCAA tournament anymore, or just in the NCAA in general, is people who are both wildly talented and physically mature. Like, that's what you've lost with all the guys leaving early. And I'm not knocking the guys for leaving early, but now you're even losing, like, some of the best really young guys because some of them are going to go play in, like, various pro leagues. They're going to play in the G League and stuff like that, you know? But it never feels like you're watching excellence. Like, Gonzaga, now, they look excellent, right? But outside of that, the tournament never feels like you're watching excellence. It's like they're betting at this point on you just watching the tournament because it is the tournament. But I'm not getting anything while I'm watching it. Like, especially this year. I'm just like, I'm not getting anything at all out of this. And that, man, that's just a bit of a bummer. Like, when it really, like, to me, this isn't even really about the fact that, well, Duke's not in it, Kentucky's not in it, North Carolina got bounced early, Indiana wasn't in it, Kansas is already out to paint, you know, all of that stuff. The issue for me is not simply losing those names, but the fact that they didn't have the teams Like, we don't have really good teams that are in this tournament anymore. And I'm wondering how sustainable that ultimately is going to be. Like, there is no program in college basketball currently that stirs up emotions, positive or negative. You know, like, when is the last time that there was a team that was like a legitimate phenomenon? So, like, we talk about Phi Slamma Jamma, for example. Like, that was one. But it doesn't even necessarily need to be something on the level of like Phi Slamma Jamma or the Hoya Paranoia or stuff like that, right? Like, I don't even think it needs to get necessarily that place. But like Georgia Tech, you guys ain't gonna remember this, you younger folks, but in 1990, they had a team that made the Final Four, and it was Lethal Weapon 3. That's what we called them. You had Kenny Anderson, you had Dennis Scott, and you had Brian Oliver. And it was a thing. Like, it was a real thing that we all talked about. You don't get that anymore. Like, what Kenny Anderson was coming in and what he turned out to be getting the final. We don't get those things anymore. You're not going to get a game like the 92 East Regional Final between Duke and Kentucky. Quite simply, the greatest college basketball game ever played. Because you're not going to get that story of those guys from Kentucky, like the dudes who were local from Kentucky, who stuck around after all the sanctions and everything else. And then they added Jamal Mashburn. And then they were then faced up against the defending national champions, where just about all those guys came back to school. Right, you're not going to have a team that's good enough and enough of a phenomenon on one side to make the underdog story of the other side really resonate. You're not getting that. Like, the things that really make college basketball intriguing are not there. I was talking to my buddy Matt Jones in Kentucky Sports Radio, and we were talking about that period of time from like 1990 to 1993 and what college basketball was. And I think, like, you young guys who were born around that time, you'll never be able to appreciate like what a massive, giant deal college basketball was during that time. It wasn't just about the names. It was about the players that were on those teams. Like, you think about Duke at this point in time. There's no reason to have any emotional feeling about Duke anymore. Like, we got a whole generation of kids that's going to have no idea why people who grew up when I did hated Duke from the depths of their souls. Because Duke doesn't have a personality anymore. Duke doesn't have a brand that jumps out. You know, Carolina even doesn't have that anymore if you happen to be on the other side. Like, there's nobody in college basketball to make you care. There aren't even any coaches left that generate any level of real emotion where you like them, love them, hate them, whatever it is. None of that is present anymore. Like, all the life is gone from college basketball. And see, to me, if the players aren't going to be there anymore, at least the coaches can be fun, right? Like, at least the coaches can be something that we got a reason to pay attention to. I don't feel like we have that anymore. So what do we wind up with? We wind up with a bunch of games between young dudes. And I would probably really enjoy watching them play like pickup basketball. You know, like, if I saw all these guys playing at 24-hour fitness, I would probably enjoy watching that. But I don't want to watch them play organized basketball. They're just not good enough for that. There's just not enough talent on the floor for me to want to watch that. Like, I was watching that Houston team, and I was like, I don't know if a single one of these guys is going to the NBA. Like, I was watching that Alabama team, and I was like, how many of them is it going to be? And look, by the time we get to the end, we'll probably still get some good basketball. We'll probably have some, like, junior, senior-led teams, because that matters in this tournament, and maybe it'll get there. But this tournament, if college basketball doesn't become more interesting, at some point, we're just going to kind of stop caring about this tournament. It hasn't been exciting like that. Now, I will say this, though. I'm not sure if I'm happy or unhappy that Oral Roberts got bounced. I can't tell how I feel about that. And this is why I say that. On one hand, I always get uncomfortable, like, when Oral Roberts or Liberty or one of these schools comes up, because we just act like we don't know what they get down is. But if they kept going, then I would have had more chances and more places to get these Oral Roberts jokes off. Gabe, were you familiar with Oral Roberts? Like, who he was?
I wasn't before.
Yeah, but you heard the best Oral Roberts story, right?
Share it. I'm interested to hear what one you think is the best.
I'm talking about Oral Roberts. He was a televangelist, for those of you who don't know. A televangelist who had his own college. Always worry about somebody that names a college after himself, first and last name. Always. Like, he didn't name it after the family. He named it after himself. Anyway, some point, Oral Roberts is having some financial difficulties with school and all kinds of other stuff. And Oral Roberts said in a quote, or close enough to a quote, that if I don't raise $8 million in a year, this part is a quote, God is going to call me home. And he raised $9 million. Oh, Gabe, you hadn't heard that one?
I hadn't heard that one.
Oh, I guess you probably just heard about the vision of the 900-foot Jesus and like that statue they built with the hands coming together. That some people say the statue was built with the hands out and then somebody dropped some money and then the hand closed. And somebody once asked Oral Roberts if God got any of the money that he raised. And Oral Roberts said, I throw the money up and what God catches, he keeps. Like 100% Cobb-ass stuff. People are like, oh, yeah, Oral Roberts is your Cinderella. Yeah, that's only because they went over and told the referee, like, look, you know, I know there's a lot to put on you, but they say if we don't win this game, we're going to die when we get back to campus. Just putting it out there. How else do you think they got to the Sweet 16?
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
Today's If You Haven't Heard difference-making stories brought to you by CarMax. Don't just buy a car, love your car with the new CarMax Love Your Car Guarantee.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from health.
This is Ronnie Rabin with the New York Times. Since the pandemic started and lockdowns have been keeping people indoors, everyone's been worried about gaining weight, the dreaded quarantine 15. But there haven't really been any good studies measuring this, especially since people are going to the doctor virtually. They're not even getting weighed. Now there's a study that gives us an indication of what may be going on. It's very small, only 269 people, so take it with a grain of salt. But these people take part in a heart health research project, and they had volunteered to report their weight measurements directly from Bluetooth-connected smart scales, and they weighed themselves regularly. They'd been losing weight before the pandemic started. After shelter-in-place orders, they started gaining about 0.6 pounds every 10 days. That's nearly 2 pounds a month. Not a huge amount, but it can add up over the course of the year to about 20 pounds or more. It's not just what people are eating that may be different. It's that we're all moving less. Experts say there's a lot of physical activity and just going about your day, getting yourself to work, running an errand, getting up to go to a meeting instead of changing the screen, going out. Are these people typical? We don't know. They were already tracking their weight and concerned about their health. So the professor who ran the study, a cardiologist named Dr. Gregory Marcus, said this could be the tip of the iceberg.
All I'm saying, man, if I can't gain no weight now, when the hell I'ma do it? I be seeing y'all. Y'all getting chunky as hell out here. I've been trying to put on weight for 25, 30 years, man. I can't find a way to make it happen. None whatsoever. Y'all out here complaining, worried about that. Send some of that on to me, baby. I'll put it to use.
It's also a question of, like, what weight is good to put on versus what weight is not good to put on.
Yeah.
Muscle weighs more than fat.
Yeah, but I also think that a difficulty for people, too, is that I think a lot of people have like gotten on like working out, you know, and doing that kind of stuff like that. But if you're still not moving just in the ways that you were moving, then them things are going to stick to you, you know? And I also think the part in there where I think it's one thing to just, you know, kind of mention it. But I think the other thing is, man, this is compounding a lot of people's misery. You know, like I joke about the fact that, you know, I can't gain weight or whatever, but I always have to be careful about this because I know that this is a different kind of struggle for a lot of people. Like the struggle of weight is a huge thing and it greatly affects people's self-esteem, you know, in a lot of ways and stuff like that. And there's a lot of people out here bigger than they ever been. And that on top of everything else is rough.
I would imagine a lot of people too, like you said, depend on their commute to the work in terms of foot traffic as part of their workout.
Yeah.
You know, people are like, oh, I got to walk 6 blocks to work every day. That's me getting my steps in.
Well, especially like in New York, like when I look at it, I would walk like 2 miles a day, just home to Subway, Subway to work, you know, with flights of steps and all of that stuff. That's just not part of my life now. It's not there. So like, I try to get out and like walk around the neighborhood a little bit, you know, go stroll. But like, you got to kind of kill like an hour. I mean, not a full hour, but you know, but you got to kill a lot of time in order to make that. And just because I'm at home all the time don't mean I got time. I got stuff to do. I hope for a lot of people that as the shots get out and people start being able to get out here in these streets, that they can start making those moves.
All right, this next one comes from business.
Kaya Yuryev, tech reporter at CNN Business. Google recently announced that it's doubling down on office space despite the ongoing pandemic and the rise in remote work. Google plans to invest more than $7 billion in offices and data centers in the US, and it also pledged to create at least 10,000 new full-time jobs this year. It's investing in its home state of California, of course, and also adding new roles in other cities like Atlanta, Washington, DC, Chicago, and New York. The move is interesting because Silicon Valley's biggest companies were some of the first businesses to tell their employees to work remotely when COVID-19 started spreading in the US last year. So Google committing to more office space signals that tech companies are betting on a future that still involves office work, even though they continue to extend telecommuting options during the pandemic. And Google's not the only one snapping up new office space and being opportunistic. Facebook announced it would buy a previously unused corporate headquarters from a retailer, even though CEO Mark Zuckerberg has said he could see half of Facebook's employees permanently working remotely within the next 5 to 10 years. And Amazon also said last year that it's expanding offices and increasing its office footprint in cities like New York, Dallas, and Denver. So these moves really show that tech giants can afford to be more opportunistic in picking up commercial real estate, regardless of whether in the future they have longer-term plans for transitioning to more remote work. Ultimately, these moves signal that big tech is not totally leaving the office behind. Unlike some startups and smaller tech firms that have promised work from home forever, big tech has spent billions on elaborate offices with ball pits and free cafeterias over the years, and they might be more reluctant to abandon in-person work after the pandemic ends.
So I've had two thoughts, really, on the idea of whether or not people are going to go back to offices and how companies are going to handle this and like what the ethos and all this stuff comes down to, right? Number one, even as someone who has found a measure of ease from doing work at home, like, for example, Gabe, I think we can pull the curtain back a little bit for people. It has actually, for us, been a bit helpful to do the podcast remotely. Because a big part of it for us was when we were doing the podcast from the office, you're in Bristol, I'm in New York, maybe I'll have a guest directly in front of me. But a lot of times it was just like somebody in my ear and I can't see that person. And it affected the quality of the interviews that we were doing. And we didn't lose anything functionally, like the sound is still good, for example. And so for us, we actually improve the quality of the product from being in separate locations. And it's interesting because this whole thing on us shut down as the television show I was doing was shutting down. You know, so I don't know what it would be like if I had to be there for that anyway, whether it would still be good. Like there's all those things. But I do know that for us, being at home has made this product better. At the same time, I am really stunned at the idea that people would think after being shut in their houses for all of this time, that people wouldn't want to get out and go to the office. And I guess maybe for me, like for people, like I think that going to work and having to talk to people that you don't necessarily want to talk to and stuff like that, I think that that's kind of stressful for a lot of people in some ways. Like, it'll cause me nothing. Like, I like having the quick conversations with people, you know, by the water cooler or whatever it is. Like, I like seeing people. Like, with the Seaport in particular, there's no telling who might show up at work at a given day. You post it up at your desk, you look up, and it's Magic Johnson. You know, and now you're talking to Magic Johnson. Like, I understand that my job, Magic Johnson ain't just rolling up on everybody's job, right? So, like, I understand that my job, not the same as everybody else's on that front. But like, it's good to see those people. It's good to have that level of just human interaction, if they're not humans, that you necessarily want to spend all your time with. But I can't imagine that anybody came out of this and was just like, cool, now I want to be at my house 40 hours a day. You know, maybe you'll be able to fix it going out to dinner at night and hanging out with people, because I think the roaring 20s are on our way once everybody gets vaccinated, because everybody gonna hit these streets and wild out, right? But I can't see people just wanting to be at home all the time after being at home all the time. There were real good things about it at first, but I would think those things wore people down. And I would think that for some of these companies, having office space, you're gonna want to give people the option of getting the hell out of the house.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting about the story that Kaya did also, too, is like Google's investing in office space, Facebook's investing in office space in the Bay Area there. Meanwhile, like a bunch of other tech giants were leaving, right?
Yeah.
You wonder if there's any pressure there, like local pressure from Bay Area officials or from government officials, state government being like, yo, you got to stick this one out. We can't lose you, too.
Yeah, that is a very good question. Now, granted, I doubt they're paying any tax worth discussing, right? But I do think that that is a good point. Now, this is the thing to me, and this is what I say, the second thing that struck me about that story. Normally, when you find out what Google's doing, it's telling us what we about to do. Like, I forget what point it was, way back whatever, and they were like, yeah, Google's going to go to telework through July, which told me, oh, okay, we're not going to have all these people vaccinated until July. Got it. I don't know who Google talking to. Like, I bet, you know, we got the regular Google. You know what I'm saying? I bet there's a Google inside Google that get to the bottom of everything. It's a whole different game on the search thing. You know, like I was once talking to a guy who had a like significant job at a company I worked for. And we talk about booking his hotels. He got a whole nother app than we got. Like he wasn't going to book his hotel room. And then one of the employees stumble in. Oh, no. He had a whole nother app for his rooms. The ones where the thing don't never come up until you restricted. Like it ain't coming up on his side. Like that's just, I bet Google got super Google that they use over there. Bet you.
Yeah, when I worked at the Embassy Suites in Napa, California in high school, we did have a site that I could go to book travel accommodations that weren't on the surface. You couldn't see them.
I am imagining you in, like, were you working the desk or were you carrying stuff?
I was a bellboy, baby.
Oh, so they had you in an Embassy Suites get up?
No, so I was rocking the, like, khakis with the white polo.
Oh, okay. I thought they had you in something like dark color with brass buttons and a funny hat.
Nah, this is California, man. You're rocking polo, possibly even could do khaki shorts, but I was doing khaki pants.
Man, let me tell you something about the Embassy Suites. I remember when I was a kid and I would see them commercials for the Embassy Suites. The Embassy Suites seemed like the height of luxury to me. Like they made the Embassy Suites. Like it's kind of like when you were a kid, and I guess I don't know what the analogous restaurant would be for y'all. And I want to be clear that the Embassy Suites is not quite analogous to the establishment I'm about to describe. But there used to be this place called the Sizzler. Was the Sizzler a thing when y'all was out here? When y'all like the Sizzler steak and ale? Like that's a fun game to play when you look at a building and you be like, oh, that used to be a steak and ale. And don't nobody know nothing about steak and ale. Like there's always a place that has a run and then it winds up getting replaced by another one in the game, right? But anyway, the Sizzler was a thing. And you know, like if you had a little money, but not like money, a night out at the Sizzler was a thing. But the Sizzler had these commercials for all you could eat shrimp. And I wanted the all you could eat shrimp so bad. And I badgered my parents for the all you could eat shrimp, all you can eat shrimp. And then at some point, I don't even remember where this Sizzler was, but we actually went to the Sizzler to get these all you can eat shrimp. Because let's be real, no matter who you are, your race, your gender, anything else, the prospect of all you can eat shrimp, the people love it, right? Like that's the reason why I was in a commercial. So it's all you can eat shrimp. My brother referred to them as all you can eat rocks. And I was like, how do you know? Because we'd never been to the Sizzler, right? How would you know? Man, we got there. Let me tell you, it was all you could eat rocks. Like that was, and I just remember I looked at my brother. I was like, he was like, yep, all you can eat rocks, huh? I'm like, yeah. Like, I don't know what anybody else ordered. I look back on it, like, thanks to everybody for taking one for the team. Cause I know what it's like now when I go visit my daddy and he wants to go to these restaurants where I'm like, yo, man, I make a lot of money now. You know what I'm saying? I kind of don't do this no more. But they, like, that was it. It was the all you could eat rocks. That was what the Sizzler was. And I'm not saying the Embassy Suites is that, but the Embassy Suites seemed like the height of luxury, like the Sizzler seemed like the height of luxury back when I was a kid. And it ain't bad, but it ain't that.
Things are not always what they appear to be.
That is right. That is right. Like you ever been to the Palazzo in Vegas?
I have not, no.
Like, the Palazzo is like an all-suite setup hotel. That's what I thought the Embassy Suites was. And I'm here to tell you, the Embassy Suites, while being good enough, is not the Palazzo.
All right, this last story comes from tech.
I'm Dalvin Brown, and I cover innovation for the Washington Post. Facebook recently revealed plans to launch a wristband powered by your thoughts. The company says the device could interpret people's intent to move their hand and thus trigger a reaction in augmented reality. So picture this. You're wearing some futuristic glasses that allow you to scroll through your text messages in midair. Or you flick your wrist in the air to pause music on your smart speaker. Those are the types of ideas that Facebook has in mind. But in order to unlock that type of technology, the social networking giant needs access to a new type of data. And that is your thinking. The wristband looks like a thick black strap with an iPad on it, sort of strapped around the wrist. And in theory, its sensors would be able to pick up the hand movements that you intend to make. But it's too soon to know whether the device will ever come to market. Facebook says that its research is still in the early phases and that any type of consumer product would be years away. But it's interesting to think about the reinvention of the computer click and how technology such as this might allow us to interact with digitized imagery in the future. There are obviously privacy concerns with brain data, but Facebook is saying that privacy is a top concern as it moves forward with developing this wristband.
Y'all gonna do it. Y'all dumbass is gonna do it. You just need to get in your brain. That's all. Like, is it that hard just to press pause? They're like, yeah, you can raise your wrist and then the whatchamacallit pauses. You know what I'm saying? That actually makes me think. Hit the music right fast.
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
That's all I'm saying. Just imagine that's what you're doing, man. That music gonna keep starting and stopping, starting and stopping. You're gonna be mad as hell. Anyway, my point simply being, if you don't hear a bad idea in this, you are the reason we are doomed. I don't know what I think half the time, but Facebook gonna know it before me. They're like, yeah, we actually ran this through a whole algorithm. Boy, you're on to something there. What am I on to? Something. Trust me.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bomani. So there wasn't necessarily an idea that I had with bringing up this topic for the segment again. But it always returns good results. Always. People quitting on the job. In the middle of the job. We were talking about the height of luxury before. Some may say that the Cheesecake Factory is the height of luxury. My guy Hunter in Portland has a good story about the Cheesecake Factory.
One of my dear friends and old boss of mine, a gentleman named Kojo, a Ghanaian dude, we worked together in a restaurant years ago, and he told me a story of when he first came to the States and was working at a Cheesecake Factory, which we all know is gotta just be an absolute nightmare. This is back in the early 90s. You know, folks were a little bit less sensitive to individuals, and, you know, cats were just giving them grief for whatever, you know, reason. And he decided one day, I am not going to put up with it anymore. So my man went ahead and got a hold of the manager's login number to the computer to where he could access every table in this behemoth of a restaurant, and decided that he was going to go ahead and put in about 30 orders on a bunch of random tables and a bunch of random server sections. Nothing crazy out of the ordinary that would raise an eye, but just all sorts of food. You know, and when you work in the Cheesecake Factory kitchen, you don't bat an eyelash at 30 orders coming in all at one time. So basically what my man did is he put that in and then just chucked the deuce, walked right on out, and let the melee ensue. And I can only imagine what it had to be like for some of those line cooks that have been a jerk to my guy as they just saw plate of food after plate of food after plate of food, walk out of the kitchen and then come right back in, and the look of confusion and horror on the staff's face. I've always loved that story, and every time somebody wants to give me a little bit of a, you know, I can't wait till the day I walk out of this job, I think back on Kojo and I smile and love the fact that he just gave everybody two middle fingers and said, I'm out.
I tell you this too, them live cooks was like, when Kunta Kinte come pick up his last check, I got something for him. Kojo was like, man, I ain't coming to get that $235 an hour check. I got my tips.
You wonder if there was some sort of knockdown domino effect, because if he's quitting, at some point these line cooks putting 30 orders in that are all wrong and not supposed to be going to anyone, I might just take off my hat and throw it in.
Oh yeah, I got a friend that quit her job at the Red Lobster in her shifts. She said the endless shrimp did her in. Like, people were just going too far. It just went too far. The endless shrimp was a wrap.
You mean to tell me someone's putting in an order for how much?
Nah, I'm good.
All right, this next one, I think the guy's name is Jux, but he's in Miami. It's a good one.
My barber, who was not cutting my hair, but he was cutting my brother's hair, started to get in an argument with one of the other barbers. This is not unusual for, you know, black barbershops, but this one got a little heated, and there were a lot of threats, and halfway through the haircut, he just starts yanking plugs out of the wall. He took his whole sanitizer for the clippers with all his clippers in it and walked out on my brother in the middle of his haircut. Yeah, that was rough. Half a head, and one of the other barbers had to come over and finish him up, but that was definitely the best quitting on the job I've seen. Bad for my brother, but good for the pod.
Yeah, I'm glad he threw in that last part. Yes, terrible for your brother. And what was the worst part about it for your brother is, at some point, your brother is recognizing this is going on and is like, hey, man, can you let my man finish that? You want to say that, except it sounded like it was too heated for you to be the third person into this situation. You just sitting there with half a haircut?
But do you really want an angry barber finishing up your head of hair?
Nah, you needed to intervene early in this one. Like, yo, man, I got somewhere to be. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's where he needed to go with it. He needed to head that off at the pass. But then after a certain point, you just got to sit there. And he said the other barber came and finished him up. Like, I don't know. Two barbers on one haircut. That seemed like it could be not right. Like, all of a sudden, whatever, I don't know if he had a plan for his haircut, but it just needed to turn into number one all around. I ain't never heard of nobody packing up their stuff and leaving. You know what that tells me? That man's on parole and could not go back. Probation at the least.
All right. This last one is a good one. The guy didn't leave his name or where he was from.
I worked for this company, and about 2 years ago, we had this guy working for us, and it wasn't working out. You know, there were some interpersonal things, and his, you know, job product wasn't very good. And so we had discussions about letting him go, but he was still on the job at the time. And so one day I went to go pick up lunch, and I got a phone call from somebody in the office, and they said, hey, have you seen Chris? And I said, no. And they said, well, is he with you? And I said, why would he be with me? Like, why would I take him to lunch and not tell anybody? So it turns out he had been gone for about 20 minutes, and no one could figure out where he was. He wasn't answering his phone, and everybody was pretty weirded out by the whole thing. So he never came back, and we actually ended up never hearing from the guy again. But luckily, we had some security cameras in the office. And so what happened was, sometime around lunchtime, he was at his computer, and he started Googling some stuff. And then we noticed he kind of got his desk in order. You know, he was shuffling papers around, putting stuff away. And then he got up and he grabbed his coat and he started to walk towards the door. And then he came back to his desk, put his coat back on his chair, sat back down, Googled something. And then about 10 minutes after that, he got up, grabbed his coat, and he left. What we found out, because he left his computer unlocked, is that he had Googled, do they have to pay you if you quit? And the kicker was, he didn't spell out the word U. He just put the letter U. So this dude was thinking about quitting, obviously had a whole dilemma about it. And then once he Googled, do they have to pay you if you quit, and found out that, yes, in fact, by law, we had to pay him for the time that he was there, he decided that was good enough for him. And he left. We never heard from the guy again.
I mean, but how is it going to go if the answer was no? Sometimes you got to take that phone off the Wi-Fi and look that up with the 4G. Oh, man, in that moment, he had had enough. Like, he didn't plan it the night right before he walked out. They still pay me if I, oh, Deuces! But ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 days a week. Gabe Bassane and Tony Collette, you would handle everything behind the scene. Thank you, fellas. Thank you to CarMax. Also, thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Ronnie Rabner of the New York Times. Check out her story on people gaining weight during the pandemic. Thanks to Kaya Yuryev of CNN Business. Check out her story on Google doubling down on office space, even though so many people are going to be working from home. And thanks to Mr. Dalvin Brown of the Washington Post. Check out his story on how Facebook wants to control augmented reality with your thoughts. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.